Second District Congressman Mark Pocan is recovering from a health care scare, but he's well enough now to join us for a Newsmakers. The Democrat is back in the Wisconsin Ice studio. Mark, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Glad you're feeling better.
I'm glad I'm feeling better, too. Thank you.
That was a serious heart incident you had, though?
I had a triple bypass. Really more preventative. There's no damage to the heart. I have a healthy heart, which is great. I just had bad plumbing, and now I've got good plumbing. So hopefully that gives me several decades into the future, and I'm just going to be good and smart about it.
Well, glad you're back and healthy.
Yeah, thank you.
You ready to go back to Washington? But let's start the big conversation this way. First year of the Trump administration. Highlights, lowlights, overall impressions?
Yeah, it's hard to find highlights. It's been a pretty tough year. This is kind of unprecedented. I think if you were going to write a novel and someone would write down what happened last year, I think publishers would have rejected it as too outrageous and too unbelievable, and that's kind of what we had. They came after people's health care. 23 million people were going to lose health care at one point. Luckily, they couldn't get that done. We still didn't pass the budget process like we're supposed to, the 101 of government. And when I used to be the co-chair of the Finance Committee, what we got done and did on time, they can't still figure out, even though they're in charge of the House, the Senate, and the White House. And the only thing they really got done at the end of the year was a tax cut for their wealthy donors, for the top 1% for corporations. And it's been a really bad, bad year. I guess trying to find a silver lining would be people are upset and watching this, and they're more engaged than ever. We recently, on the net neutrality issue, when they were going to try to take away the openness of
internet.
We had over 6,400 contacts on that, all against what they were doing, no one for it whatsoever. So I think the fact that that kind of volume, I remember my first year on when they were talking about the U.S. possibly going to Syria, we had 2,200 contacts in a relatively, under a month. This really shows how engaged people are right now. So I think that's positive, right? And regardless of how they vote and what they decide on issues, the fact that they're engaged is a positive.
Well, let's talk about the tax reform, because people are about to see slightly more in their paychecks. Is that going to be a big boost for the Trump administration and the GOP in Congress? The short-term gain of individuals in seeing more in their paychecks?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, they sold this. Remember when Donald Trump said, I'm not going to benefit from this. My rich friends are all upset with me. And then when he went to Mar-a-Lago over the holidays, he said, I just made you all richer. I mean, that's what happened. When you look at the bill after 2027, when the tax breaks for the middle class go away, 83% of all the money.
Tax breaks are permanent for the corporate.
Corporations and the wealthy, and the cuts for the wealthy individuals. So 83% of the money is going to go to the top 1% at the end in 2027. So that's how skewed they are. But even from what I saw, and it's going to depend on a lot of how you do deductions and things, whether you have a tax increase or a tax cut. But if you're making $24,000, you might see $60. This is what I saw on one list. If you make $50,000, you might see $600. And then when you start making into the hundred thousands, you see lots of money. And of course, the top 1 and 2% see tens of millions, and if not even more, corporations are going to see even bigger tax breaks. But what you know also happens with that is now they blew at least, I think it was a $1.4 trillion hole. But if you take interest and everything else into consideration on that, you're over $2 trillion. Within days after they did that, Paul Ryan said, we've got to get the deficit under control, and you have to do that by going after Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
Yeah, the entitlement reform issues.
Yeah.
Do you think they can do that next year?
They're going to have a hard time because, one, absolutely the public doesn't support it. I mean, we pay in with our paychecks into Medicare and Social Security all our lives, and now they want to take away our money. I don't think that's going to fly real well. Plus, those are some of the most popular programs that the federal government does. So I think Paul Ryan wants to do it in the House. It's tougher in the Senate because with Doug Jones winning in Alabama, there's only a 2-seat margin. Susan Collins from Maine, any other Republican can now block things. And I think it's going to be difficult for them to do. But the fact that they had the audacity to, within days after they blew this giant deficit hole because they gave tax breaks to their wealthy donors, which is from their words, not mine. This is multiple Republicans saying they had to do this for their donor base or they weren't going to be there for them. The fact that they, within days, they said they're going to go after Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid in order to fix the deficit. I think people understand that this is like trying to give a little misdirection. Here's $50 this month. Here's $5 this month. And I don't think anyone's that cheap.
Ron Johnson went to Washington saying two things. I want to repeal and replace Obamacare. Number one, I want to attack the deficit. He said that the growth spur, the economic growth, as a result of the tax code changes, will not add to the deficit. Where did he get the conversion here?
There's some beautiful place with unicorns riding rainbows where maybe they came up with this, because it's not real. No credible economist has said that's going to happen. They're assuming giant rates of growth.
Economic growth.
Yeah, coming out of this. But already we know that companies have been banking money since 2008 as the economy has come back. We know that there's a lot of other issues around antitrust and other things where you have consolidation of industries. They're sitting on money and not reinvesting in their companies or their employees right now. And the fact that they get even more, what's going to happen is it all goes to the top shareholders. And that, again, is that top 1% and 2%. It's not the average person sitting around. So I think it's a fantasy to believe that, and there's only been a couple conservative economists who are saying it's going to happen, but the vast majority of every other economist out there, liberal, conservative, non-political, has said that that's not going to occur. So this is just blowing a giant hole in the deficit, which has to be paid for somehow, and unfortunately where they're going to do it is probably not defense spending. It's going to be spending that affects real people like Social Security and Medicare. So we've got to fight to protect those programs.
Some of your fellow House Democrats have launched an impeachment petition. What a serious process. I mean, let's not take this lightly.
Right.
Is that a realistic possibility? Have you signed that?
Yes. I believe, well, it's a, let me think about it. I have said I would have voted for it when it came on the floor. I was gone during that time. So I'm not sure if I was actually a sponsor or not. I really can't tell you that, Steve, offhand, because it happened while I was gone. To actually get impeachment, or the other thing people talk about is the 25th Amendment, whether or not this president's stable enough to be president, is going to require Republicans.
Let me stop you there. When we get on the exercise machines, you and I, we listen to MSNBC and CNN. Mike Barnicle of MSNBC said this president is unfit for office. Do you agree?
I think there are many ways that he's unfit for being president. I lost the hope that we could really work with this guy somewhere was over the summer when we had the Charlottesville situation, and you had neo-Nazis and Klansmen and alt-right, which is the new cleansing word of these type of critter that are out there without masks, who are proud enough to march in the streets. And when they did what they did and someone got killed, the president's reaction was, there are very fine people on both sides. When he said that, and then I watched him on teleprompter act like an adult and off teleprompter go back to, there's very fine people on both sides. I lost the that's not a something that a president who's supposed to unify a nation can ever say. And just all the other actions I've seen him do really show that. The DACA issue. There's no problem with the 700,000 DACA kids that we have in this country. In fact, they don't have criminal records. They don't have any of the things that he's put out anti-immigrant rhetoric out there. It's worked really well. But he, by doing what he did with that executive order and causing a problem, you're affecting the lives of all these people that are really the future of this country in many ways as well. So I've just seen him do so many things that are unpresidential. It's not disagreeing about tax rates, all right? That, I think, is more ideological. But it's things that really are at the core of who we are as a country that go beyond Democrat, Republican, Independent, that show an unfitness. So I think we have to obviously make a case. And I think where we're really going to find something to happen is around collusion, around Russian interference in our elections. Okay. I think everything I've seen from classified briefings I've been to, from reading and listening to things, that there's no question in my mind, definitely people within the Trump campaign, very likely high up in the campaign, could be his own family members, if not him himself, knew what was going on and there was collusion. And I think that does become impeachable or trying to obstruct us figuring that out, which is what it looks like he might be trying to do and has done, is impeachable. So that's where we have to convince Republicans to come on board. So that's why I think I don't come about it lightly, because you do need to get bipartisan votes for it. I certainly think I've seen many things personally that greatly worry me and I think are qualifying of those categories, but we have to find others who are Republicans to find it qualifying.
Is it responsible, Mark, for you to take a position that you would vote for an impeachment resolution when Mr. Mueller has not made his final report yet?
Because I think there's other things. I think that it's not just Russian collusion that we're talking about impeachment. There's emoluments clause, the fact that he's profiting
personally
as a president,
profiting,
which you're not able, not supposed to do, and he's doing over and over and over again. I mean, there's so many other things.
Mr. Bannon says it might be about money laundering.
Right. I can point directly to right now. There is no question he is profiting, including a hotel in Washington D.C. that he's not supposed to, according to our laws.
Have you ever set foot in that hotel?
You know, I haven't. I walked right by it because it's a beautiful building, but I've never been in there. Yeah.
Is violation of the emoluments clause in and of itself enough to impeach a president?
I think a continue to do that, and he went to China early on, and all of a sudden they approved a bunch of his trademarks. I mean, you go down the list. You're supposed to put your finances separate, under ethics laws of how it happens.
Blind trust.
And he refuses to do all of that. And I think, but I could point to a number of things that people could say these are impeachable offenses. Bottom line is just being a pragmatist, like I have been most of my life in politics. You have to get, in the case of impeachment, bipartisan votes. So what's most likely to do that is perhaps the collusion around the Russian involvement in the elections. I would hope that there are people who do country first over their political party, and if there is collusion, say, look, this is completely unacceptable. We can't have a foreign country coming in and doing this and that and this in our elections, and if a campaign knew about it, that's an impeachable offense.
Let's go back to DACA, because the president has said, for me to give on DACA, I need the next step, the approval from Congress for the wall with Mexico. Does this lay the groundwork for your party contributing to a shutdown of government? Because we're coming up on the next deadline, as you well know. Yeah.
So that's the most recent version. Now, you just go back a few months. When he originally did this, that was not what he said. He did the DACA thing, saying there was a problem, which there was not.
And he gave Congress 6 months to...
And when our leadership... Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer sat down with him. He talked to them specifically about, never mention a wall. He said, can we put some additional roads along the border? Can we do some drones on the border? Which we said, those are security measures. We didn't want a wall, and we didn't want further detention beds. Those are some of the things that we said absolutely non-starters. And he agreed to it, but then within 24 hours, when he went back out to doing rallies and his base wants to build the wall, he backed off of his word. So again, he caused a problem that wasn't existing before around DACA. Then he went against his word on the deal. So I've been one of the people in Congress that actually has been saying Democrats should say, absolutely, we don't vote for a continuing resolution unless they fix DACA, because it's a broken problem he only did for leverage for something else, and we shouldn't allow that. And secondly, they can pass a continuing resolution. They're in the majority. But the fact that they allow their wingnut caucus, the Tea Party caucus, to continue to be the tail that wags the dog, and they'll never vote for funding, and therefore they need our votes, that means they have to negotiate with us, and they refuse to negotiate with us on spending, on policy, on anything. So it's kind of common sense. I mean, here, when I was on the Joint Finance Committee, we had an 8-8 committee because we had a split legislature. Nothing went through new unless it had
without
bipartisan
compromise.
Supports. It
right.
had to have compromise. Right. Scott Souter from Abbotsford, one of the more conservative members,
majority,
myself,
former
one of the
majority leader,
more liberal members, we put together a corrections budget that year that got a 16-0 vote because we talked to each other, listened to each other, and got to know what our priorities were, and then we could come up with something that everyone could agree on. You can still do that, but they're not trying to do that. So instead, they say, oh, Democrats are going to cause this. We're like, no, bare minimum, you broke something, you pay for it, right? Fix it. And now let's talk about the real stuff we got to do for the country. But, you can't just purposely take this mug, break it, and go, look, we got to, it's the responsibility is in his lap on DACA. And I think to put that many kids, people who are, doing really great things in this country, at risk is just, again, one of the things that makes it very difficult to respect this president.
Another recent presidential tweet, my nuclear button is bigger than yours. Tweets like that, are they going to will the establishment Republicans, to use Mr. Bannon's term, will they continue to align with Mr. Trump, President Trump, or will tweets like that begin to widen a schism between the Republicans in Congress and the president?
I wish Paul Ryan used to stand up to Donald Trump when he ran for president. Excuse me. I want that Paul Ryan back. I think some aliens have taken him. We've got this pod creature now that seems to do whatever Donald Trump wants. The use of Twitter, I understand part of why he's doing it. He wants to lead the message of the day. He thinks he's talking directly to people, although we all know by the numbers that's not true. He's really trying to lead the message of the day. But there's other effects of those tweets. And in the first 2 days of this year, 2018, he went after Pakistan, Iran, and North Korea. And just before that, a couple days earlier, he went after China on something when we really need China over North Korea right now because they're the main economic partner with them. So he, when he does things so cavalier, other countries don't have the same sensitivities we do internally. So if he hurts our place around the globe, others are going to fill that, whether it be a Germany or a China or a Russia, someone is going to fill that for us. And unfortunately, that's the problem. So I would hope that a Republican would actually stand up to what he's doing around the tweeting because he uses it so cavalierly and so dangerously, especially around international issues. Now, I know there are Republicans who are concerned most around the international stuff because they really, they'll tell us, you know, that they know that that's the wrong direction where the president's going. But they need to stand up to him, and they never, ever do. Bob Corker has, Jeff Flake, John McCain. But like, if I can count them on one hand when there's hundreds of them in Congress, that's a problem.
Well, and GOP Senator Lindsey Graham said, a few months ago, he rated the odds of a nuclear back and forth with North Korea 30%. He now said last week, if North Korea fires another ballistic missile, the odds go up to 70%. Do you agree with that assessment? How real is a nuclear exchange with America and North Korea as a member of Congress, even though you're in the minority party?
Yeah, I hope he's wrong. I think he's probably doing that a bit for bravado. I think what people are trying to do is say, look, we got a guy that you kind of think is unstable. We do too. If you keep doing this, he might do something stupid, right? I think that's what he's saying in a more polite way. But that's the bottom line. I think people are afraid that this president, because everything is about him, because there's such a narcissism in how he does everything, that if he feels offended, like he says, don't file another one, and they do, that he'll just take it personally and do something that could be a dangerous thing. I think most people are saying this should be done through diplomatic ways. We've been trying to blockade oil going up, and I think it's smart. If anyone violates that blockade, you go after with whatever you need to do on that. But China, 90% of their economy, something like 90%, is with North Korea. And they rely on China. We can really use that leverage in a far better way, I think, than we have up to this point. So I just wish we'd do it in more diplomatic ways. And they've actually, by opening communication up with South Korea, they're showing, I think, some interesting signs.
They just said, we're going to talk.
You can't get into a president tweeting out he's got a bigger button and his button works because it's just juvenile, it's dangerous, and at the end of the day, you can't have the leader of the free world, which we still are, be doing that. That's not responsible. And Republicans need to say that.
Is North Korea your biggest international fear as we begin 2018, Congressman?
Yes, although I think I have a growing fear in the Middle East because of the recent decision to declare Jerusalem the capital. I'm watching more and more activity, not just between Palestine and Israel, but among other nations, especially other Arab nations who really are upset about that decision. Last time I was in the Middle East, I left with understanding that reason the ISIS does well is because we still have the conflict in Palestine and Israel. They can point to that and they see us siding with Israel. And Israel is our ally. I'm not saying at all it's not. But if you actually got peace in between those two countries, got a two-state solution, and going back to the borders around 1967, like we all talk about with some adjustments, you would give ISIS the biggest blow to their recruitment. And instead, we now have both the Prime Minister Netanyahu's and leaders of Hamas each saying, their political party and Hamas saying, maybe we should go back to a one-party or one-state solution. If you have a one-state solution, I think some of the political parties in Israel think they have it through might and weapons, and I think some of the folks in Palestine think they have it through numbers of people. Either way, I see conflict, and I see that as a bad direction because everyone used to be very solidified around a two-state solution, and now I'm watching this slippage. So I see that as an emerging problem, and I'm watching that closely.
You mentioned Speaker Ryan. Do you believe the political story that he could very easily retire and not seek re-election?
I think he's running in 2018. I think I could see him leaving the very next year, mid-year even in 2019. What he just did, that tax bill, gave corporations tens of billions of dollars of tax cuts. That's like the best resume you could possibly have to go to Goldman Sachs. I would just go to Goldman Sachs and write on a piece of paper, tax cuts. Hi, this is my resume. I'm Paul Ryan. I'd like a job. And I'll bet he makes 10 times his congressional salary going there. So I could see Paul, you know, leaving in a second. I don't think he's had fun being leader as far as dealing with his caucus, because he early on made a mistake of saying that he allowed the Tea Party essentially veto power, the Hastert rule they still follow in order to get things on the floor. And by doing that, he, again, let the tail wag the dog, and I think he made a mistake, and they have not treated him as well as I think. Yeah, he's given them so much. He has been way better for the Tea Party than John Boehner ever has. And yet they still don't really show the respect, because I think they are a somewhat unstable caucus at times. And I could see him leaving for that reason. But I think he may be leaving in 2018 not on his will. I think there's a real race in the 1st Congressional District with Randy Brice. That district is our closest district in Wisconsin, I think, as far as percent of the political parties. I think that Randy Brice, an iron worker, connects way better with the 14,000 people that used to make cars in Kenosha in the district and the 10,000 in Janesville than Paul Ryan does. He's gone to Washington. He doesn't do town halls anymore with common people in the district. I remember my first day when I went out to Washington when I was running for Congress, there was a story about him going out with a couple of hedge fund managers drinking $350 bottles of wine. They had not one, but two $350 bottles of wine. That's a month's worth of groceries for a family in the 1st Congressional District. I think he's going to have a interesting time in a 2018 after trying to take away health care from tens of millions of people and passing a tax cut for the top 1% and 2% to try to regain his seat in the 1st Congressional District.
Future of health care. Now, the president has withdrawn the subsidies, right? Mm-hmm. They're gone. So we're seeing huge increases for those for Americans that have to buy on the individual market. What do you see happening in 2018 on health care, given the failure of the GOP to repeal and replace?
Yeah, so we're in an odd spot, right? They couldn't... It's easy for them to hate Obamacare. You know, everyone likes the Affordable Care Act. They just don't like Obamacare. It's the same thing, right? It's easy to hate that, but it's hard to actually dismantle it because people need it and value it. I mean, there's a lot of people who are benefiting from it. So,
but they took away the mandate, individual mandate in the tax code bill.
But that, while they're saying that'll take away it for 13 million people, I mean, we still have a good chunk of folks that still will have the health care. What they're doing is death by 1,000 cuts. Also, what they did is going to cause a 10% spike in premiums, again, by neutral parties who are saying that. So now we all, even those of us who aren't on the Affordable Care Act, which is the vast majority of Americans, are going to see a spike because of what they're doing. So they're tinkering to get a talking point that they got rid of Obamacare is having all kinds of havoc in this. What I can tell you is every town hall I've done in my district and every town hall I've done in Paul Ryan's district, because I've done four of them this year since he won't do them. Since I'm from Kenosha originally, I'm going back to my home area and doing town halls. When we talk about health care, inevitably the conversation comes to a single payer or a Medicare for all system. It gets the biggest response out of anything you talk about in that that town hall. So I think what this is really setting us up for, because they're doing it so ineptly and it's going to cause damage to it, not just people who have the Affordable Care Act, but people who don't. We're all going to see premiums go up, that people are going to start saying, look, why does Canada have it wrong? Why does Holland have it wrong? And it's going to really help us to get to a system that I would argue we should have anyway.
You've always been a Democratic strategist. What is the nationally, what is the party's best themes to play offense on November 2018? Because you mentioned health care, you mentioned tax code, you mentioned DACA. What are your potential home run themes as you try to win back the U.S. House and the Senate in November?
So two of the three of those are under what I would call the umbrella of just economic, kind of kitchen table economics is what we should be talking about. Mm-hmm. People's wages really haven't gone up that much since 2008. They're starting to now just because the economy has continued to build from where it did with President Obama off of 2008. But I think most people at the kitchen table when they're sitting across from each other, can they pay their mortgage or their rent? Do they have health care for their family? Can they send a kid to college if they want to go to college? Can they take a family vacation that year? It's the basic economic issues.
Does your party have themes and solutions for those kitchen table issues?
So right now what they've put out is a better deal for Americans, which is better jobs, better wages, better future, and it's incorporating various aspects. What I think, you know, my party doesn't do well is we love to put out 16-point plans that if you have lots of time to read, you'll see how great our ideas are. Mm-hmm. We need to synthesize that to something a little bit better in how we talk about it. But the good news is They are understanding it's those core economic issues. That is health insurance. That is the tax policy and what they might pay more or get cuts to their Social Security or Medicare. I mean, if you can really make people understand that we are for the middle class and those aspiring to be in the middle class, and they are not, and they've been proving it over and over and over again, I think what happens is, like happened in Alabama, I think these numbers are right, 56% of the presidential turnout of Republicans came out to vote, 71% of the Democratic vote in the
presidential. Wasn't Alabama an aberration, given the sexual harassment allegations against Judge Moore?
Every election in a competitive state, by the end, you get sick of both candidates because they've thrown so much mud and spend so much money to make you hate both of them, right? That's how it happens in competitive states. So I don't think it's that unique, but by turnout, that is unique. Republicans didn't care enough to come out because they're not motivated by what's happening right now by the National Republican Party in Congress. Yet Democrats did because they're upset about what's going on. So if you continue that into 2018, we're seeing across the country generic ballot, I'll vote for any Democrat against this specific Republican. It's way up. And way up, when you have that many districts there within 5%, that's more than the 24 we need to pick up the House of Representatives.
Okay, you're telling me you're going to win the U.S. House?
I think we're in very good chance to pick up the U.S. House. I think you're in a more of a long shot to pick up the Senate because we have more defense. But again, this is one of those years. And I have predicted Scott Walker is not going to get reelected.
Let's talk about Scott Walker. Yeah. You have 16 Democrats registered. Is that hurting your party's emphasis? Is that too many?
No, you know, I think if I was someone who wanted to run for governor, there still may be more people coming in. And I think some of them will get out.
Has said, I'm going to be in within a few weeks.
And I think there's still, if you ever wanted to be governor, this is the year to run for governor. Because it's going to be a Democratic year. Everything is telling that, 2018. And Scott Walker, based on stuff I've seen, people know Scott Walker really well. Not that many more people are going to grow to like Scott Walker. He's got his cap of where he's at. Foxconn. That was such an awful decision. It's not supported across the state anywhere. Even in Racine, I was told it's a 50-50 prospect in the backyard of where this is happening. Yet everyone across the state is going to pay for this for at least 25 years. A $3 billion subsidy to a foreign corporation that's now estimated to be $4.5 billion, right? Because they're taking our transportation dollars. There's local subsidy.
$764 million in local.
Everyone has their own idea how they would have spent $3 billion, and it's not Scott Walker.
Is Foxconn your party's the best argument against Governor Scott Walker in November?
If I was in the state legislature right now, I would be encouraging us to go into every Republican district and have a hearing on Foxconn. And let's hear how people think about it in Fond du Lac. Let's see what they think about it in Platteville. Let's go across the state and see what benefit they think they're going to get. Because I guarantee everything I've seen, they don't like this idea. And it really is the sort of issue that shows how out of touch. Scott Walker was so desperate to get to his 250,000 promise of new jobs after 4 years. He's still trying to get there, that he went for this deal. And the fact that he didn't even mention it in his announcement for governor means he knows he screwed up.
But you heard what he said in his announcement for governor, more people working than ever, your property taxes is controlled, et cetera.
If he thought Foxconn was a winner for him, he would have been wearing a Foxconn cap, he would have had a Foxconn badge. Instead, he didn't even mention the words.
What about the 25 to 30 million that the governor could raise and spend in his third bid, bid for a third term, excuse me?
I'll tell you, from the polling I've seen, again, it's not like he's ever going to win by more than a percent or two anyway, because there's just not that much. Most people know what they think about him, and you're not going to, with 30 million, 50 million, change that. So the question is, can you chip away enough, since he's under 50% already, and use an issue like Foxconn for people to understand that now they're all going to pay for something that they're never going to get a benefit out of? It was a bad decision that he did for himself personally to up his numbers because he made a promise he never could keep up. I think there's a real path. So, again, I'm staying out of the primary on the Democratic side. My goal is to make sure they realize the person they're running against is Scott Walker and not each other. So I'm going to try to make sure that they all, you can compare and contrast.
Should some of the 16 drop out?
I think whoever wants to run for governor, it's fine. Make your case around the state and what your issues are. I don't think, you tell anyone that they have to drop out of running for office if they want to run. We're finding this across the country. We have congressional primaries with 5 people, 9 people, 12 people. I saw one race in Texas, I think up to 20 people were looking at running in a Democratic primary. that just shows where the interest and enthusiasm is. That's a teller, a harbinger of where that vote's going to be in November. So I'm not going to do anything to throw water on that.
The last Democrats to run against Walker came from either Milwaukee County or Dane County. Could someone outstate win?
Yeah, I don't, geography doesn't matter. I think that is an issue that's highly, too much is taken into consideration on that because, you know, for a while people said, oh, you can't be from Madison. Tammy Baldwin's from Madison. Jim Doyle was from Madison. Russ Feingold, you know, so that doesn't really hold so well. And I don't think it should hurt you that you're from a rural part of the state either. In fact, I think there's an argument you can make to people who felt maybe left out in those areas. But I don't think that's the main issue. I think the main issue is what are you going to do for a working family in Wisconsin that's trying to pay their mortgage and decide if they can take a family vacation that year? Do they have health insurance for their kids? If you talk about those issues, you're talking to voters. Otherwise, you know, you're just in a practice of oratory skills that maybe makes you feel good, but it's not doing much.
Well, it sounds like, despite your health care, you're back and you're ready to go back to war in Washington, right, on behalf of your party?
Yep. Yeah, I already have a thing. I've got a debate on the floor next week when I'm there, and I'm looking forward to getting back and, you know, I think 2018 is going to be a really important year for us, and I think there's a great chance that we can take back the House of Representatives. Just doing that alone gives us a goalie, right, in place with what's been happening, and that would be very positive. I think the Senate, there's still a chance at the U.S. Senate. You know, I think there's a gerrymandering. It's really hard. We'll have to see what comes back from the Supreme Court in Wisconsin to take back one or other House. I think you'll pick up seats. But the governor's race. So to me, the things to watch in Wisconsin for 2018 are the governor's race, Tammy Baldwin's race, and Paul Ryan's race. Those are the three that are the ones to watch.
Second District Congressman Mark Pocan, thanks for coming in.
Sure.
I'm glad your heart's in good shape, and it's obvious you still have the fire in the belly.
Absolutely. Thank you, Steve.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.